And welcome to another episode of GC Radio. My name is Tino Magnetta, and tonight I have a great guest on the show, Judith Wright. How are you, Judith?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So we were just talking about a couple of things. You have a conference coming up that you're the president of the Native American Human Resources Association. You got a big conference coming up. Tell us a little bit about that conference. What happens there? People come together from... Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, it's the National Native American Human Resources Association, which is also known as NAHARA. It's been in existence for 23 years. This is our 23rd annual conference. And we represent over 200 tribes and thousands of members from all over the nation and also in Canada. Our mission is to provide education and certification and information to HR professionals in Indian country. And next week, we are meeting in Minnesota at Mystic Lake, and we are going to be having approximately 600 attendees there. So we're excited. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun also. So I will be leaving tomorrow. And a lot of education, a lot of speakers, a lot of sponsors, a lot of partners that help put this on, and but it's a lot of fun.
Now you're the president of it, right?
I'm the president. I am. It's a board of seven individuals. It's all volunteer work. We don't get paid, but it's a labor of love.
Now, how long have you been involved with this?
I have been involved with the board since 2012 in various capacities, but I was elected president in 2015.
And how did it all start? What were the roots of it?
Oh, with the association itself?
Yes.
It actually started with a group of individuals in the Northwest who wanted to share information and network together. It was just a handful of individuals, and they started meeting, and it just grew from there. It didn't really take off until about, 2003, where they started the actual association and became the formal association. And then as it progressed, in 2010, they really started getting the population coming into the conferences. These last 10 years, I really want to say that it's really taken off. We've gotten our certification it's called the Tribal Human Resources Professional Certification. We have in collaboration with a group, educational institute, but then we just recently took that in-house in collaboration with a legal team, the Drummond Woodsum and NAHARA, and we did that in 2015. And so we are offering that four times a year. We have our 501(c) that we just received. We were a 501(c) prior to that. And we're just doing a lot of really good things for our HR professionals in Indian country, which is a really big need because HR in Native country is so much different than HR in the corporate world.
How so?
In many ways, depending on what state you are in and where your reservation is, there are so many, I'll call them documents, but there's so many laws and documents that you may have to follow or may not have to follow. In California, where I am, you either follow federal law, you may follow your California compact. There may be other agreements that you have to that may impact your tribe. but you may not follow California state law unless your compact implies that you do, or states that you do.
Right.
So you really have to do your research. And what may be right for our tribe, or may imply for our tribe, apply for our tribe, may not apply for the tribe that's just down the road for us. So everyone is different. So it's very different, and you really need to have a good network to pass the information on, or at least network with.
Yeah, the, most people think that HR departments, they just hire and fire people, right? But there's a huge scope that goes under HR, right?
There is a vast scope that goes under HR, and you are so right, because everybody just thinks, oh, you hire people or you fire people, there's so much in between.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. I can speak for the HR that we have here at Valley View Casino. There is employee development. There is HRIS. There is compensation. There is benefits. There's risk management. We have a one individual that is just concentrates on team member recognition and special events. One of the things that we are very proud of is the recognition and the benefits that we offer our team members. California and Southern California, especially with gaming, is so competitive. And even though our compensation does not fall under California guidelines, it's very important for us to be competitive with California salaries and compensation. So we do studies. We make sure that we fall in line to ensure that we can recruit for all of the positions that we have. And we do this every year, make sure that we do any equity adjustments that we have to do. But we offer over 65 benefits to our team members, and we just want to make sure that they feel valued and that we retain the team members that we have. We do have a very low turnover rate for this type of industry. We find that most of our turnover is in the first year. Even though you communicate what type of industry it is, you're going to be working with people, usually the fallout is in the first year. The gaming industry or the hospitality industry isn't for everybody. You really got to like people. Mm-hmm. We tell people, our team members or our applicants or candidates is that if you don't like people, this isn't the industry for you. And that's where we find it is. Yeah, our fallout.
Now, it's also a lifestyle, isn't it? Because the hours are most people are working when other people are taking holidays, right? It's a different kind of structure to get all together.
That is very true. Very true. We share. One of the things that we do offer is a very good. Vacation or PTO, we call it PTO, paid time off. And we offer, many days that you are eligible for. And our team members are able to take, their paid time off after 90 days of time that they work for us. They start earning their paid time off immediately, but we ask that they at least work 90 days before they start actually taking it. We have a PTO buyout. So if they have a need, they can buy out some of their PTO. But one of the things that, they do have to consider is that our busiest times are the holidays. Our busiest times are the weekends, and that's the time that they are going to be asked to work. So we go over that you know, in detail when we are interviewing them and also during our onboarding process.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So tell us a little bit. You guys just, you know, opened July 4th weekend. You opened your casino. It's been over 10 weeks. Tell us a little bit how it's going and what the feeling is at the casino, and all the, give us all the details.
It's going very well. We were in construction for approximately 18 months, and that included all the design and planning. And we added 45,000 square feet to our gaming floor and added a new restaurant. The new restaurant is called Patties and Pints. It is a comfort food, I'm going to say. It has burgers. It has pizzas. But they're just not burgers. They are like gourmet burgers, gourmet pizzas. And I haven't had anything I don't like. The draft beer is probably one of the coldest draft beers. Not that I drink a lot of draft beers, but they're really good, and we're getting really high remarks on you know, the food and the drinks there. We have shakes, hard shakes there, and what we're doing is actually attracting a new clientele. You know, our clientele has always been the individuals who are probably the demographics of 40 to 60 years old, usually females. And what we're finding is that the younger demographics are now coming to our casino, and that's really working for us. The floor is much more comfortable, a lot spacious. We have an additional entrance, a lot more bathrooms. And we find that our guests are coming back that we haven't seen in a few years. They're trying our gaming floor again. And also, our team members seem to be, you know, very prideful of the gaming floor again. It's really nice to see everybody out on the floor and just really proud of where they're working.
So tell us a little bit about your roots, where you were born, what your parents were like, what kind of atmosphere you grew up in. I'm going to take you back now.
I am actually a local native of San Diego. My mother is a native Kumeyaay of San Pasqual Band of Mission Indians. And my father was born in Beaumont, Texas, and is of Mexican descent. I grew up in the community of Escondido. I am the sixth of a family of eight. I have four brothers and three sisters. And I had a modest upbringing. My dad was a very hard worker, made a living in construction. He was a stern but a very loving man, and most of the time worked out of town. He was in construction and was responsible for installing large water pipe systems or the sewer pipe systems in different cities. He did a lot of the water pipes in Las Vegas when they were building that up. My mom was a homemaker, and she really raised us. And she always stressed with, you know, all of us that, you know, we should be very self-sufficient, should be very self-dependent, always have a skill if we needed to have a skill, to always depend on ourselves for our upbringing. She believed in making things happen for yourself, not sitting around and waiting for things to happen, but making things happen for yourself. So I had a good upbringing. I went to school in Escondido and had a good life. I'm currently married to a wonderful man. I have three children that are living. I have one son that's deceased, and I have 7 grandchildren, and I have another one that's expected in February.
Amazing. Yeah, family is so important. So now your history of your tribal background is different. You didn't know that you were tribal. You found out later in life, right?
I did.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I grew up off the reservation. Our reservation is actually located in Valley Center, which is a neighboring town to Escondido. And our family grew up in the community of Escondido, so I didn't really know about the reservation, and I was young. And it wasn't until, I want to say, in the 60s, and I was fairly young, that the tribe was trying to get the reservation or the enrollment back together. I believe in 1959 is when they were trying to reorganize the enrollment of the tribe. So, and what happened, I guess, where it all stems from is in the early 1900s, the original reservation was located in prime land, which is located down in the San Pascual Valley, and it was homesteaded, and the tribal members were evicted and removed from the lands there. They were given another reservations, but they resented that they were evicted and basically just relocated into the town of Escondido. So I didn't know that I was a Native American. My sisters and brothers, they seemed to know, but it was really a surprise to me. And it wasn't until someone from the BIA came and was looking for my mother and knocked on our door and asked her some questions to see about her coming back up to the reservation and enrolling a number of us and getting some land up on the reservation so they could officially put the reservation back. I don't want to say back together, but officially get it back on the records there.
Wow, pretty amazing. So when they reached out, what had they reached out? What did they want?
They just really wanted to. First of all, they wanted the band members to get back together, start meeting, set up their government, because they really hadn't done that in so many years. So they had to set up their records, and so they started to do that. They had to get their enrollment documents done. They had to get it from the BIA. They had to officially get their just all their paperwork to claim that they were an official tribe that was recognized by the federal government. And so that's when they started having meetings. I remember my mother was very active in meetings. I remember going to the tribal meetings with her, and it was just this little building that we would go to, and they started just conducting business. And here we are today.
Yeah, pretty amazing. How did it make you feel to find out you were part of a tribe?
Well, surprised at first, and I think it really had to do with my age at the time. Like I said, my older siblings seemed to know, but also proud, you know, of knowing the heritage once I started finding out. But it also answered a lot of questions, because there were some words that my mother used to use that I knew they weren't of of the Spanish language or the Mexican language. They were, now that I know, they were of the Kumeyaay language that she used to use. So it kind of put all the puzzle pieces together. And I was very proud of my heritage once I started putting the pieces together. It was confusing at first.
Yeah, because then things started to make sense for you, you'd said, right? The words your mom used and stuff like that, the customs.
Right, right. You know, just the words that she used to use. You know, she was a very strong woman, and, I felt honored even back then. I'm very proud of my heritage, and as I look back, I probably get a lot of my resilience from her and her side of a family. You know, she had a little bit of a rough start because she was only 5 when she lost her mother, and her younger brothers were somewhat, I want to say, abandoned by their father, and they were taken in by family members. And she was raised by her aunt. And for the longest time, we believed she was our grandmother. So it was a bit confusing for us, but we grew up close to relatives, but yet there was confusion on who these relatives were because we thought they were aunts and uncles and her sisters and brothers, but they really weren't. They were first cousins. It was a little confusing.
Yeah, yeah, you were able to find out a lot about your life. That's pretty amazing.
It was.
Tell me a little bit about your education and your work history, because you started out in the commercial world. But tell us a little bit about your education and how that led you to your jobs.
Well, I grew up in the early 70s, and at that time, you know, you went to high school, got married, had a family. I'm a high school graduate, and that was the expectation at the time, you get married. And, you know, I was with 2 children by age 21. I don't have what you call a formal education. My education and knowledge comes from years of hands-on experience, working with mentors, listening, and putting myself out there. I've taken classes at some of our local universities, you know, Cal State San Marcos, received certifications in human resources. But the best education is really that I received is working side by side with some really great mentors. Bruce, mentors from HP. I had the opportunity to work for some really great companies, you know, Valley View being one of them. But as you said, I worked for Hewlett-Packard Company, which was a really good company. And I worked for them in 1981 through 1996, which I believe were some really prime time for them, a really prime time for them. In those days, the only way to get your foot in the door was to really know somebody and have an employee referral. And I was lucky to have an aunt that worked there. So she was able to get me an interview. I started in the manufacturing department and eventually worked my way into HR.
Tell us a little bit about the atmosphere at HP. You said it was a very special place and a special time.
It was. It was. How do I explain it? They had a culture that I don't think any other company has really been able to duplicate. I believe that they were a very diverse company. When I went there, I used to see the leaders, which was Dave Packard and Bill Hewlett. They were fantastic role models, and they were always – when they were there, because they worked up in Palo Alto, but they would come down often, and they would walk around, and they would talk to everyone. They were executives who believed in communicating directly to every individual, whether they worked on the manufacturing lines, whether you were a custodian, whether it didn't matter, whether you were an engineer. They respected every individual. They believed in communication, face-to-face communication. They had what they called MBWA, which was management by walking around. And they had what they called the HP way, which was the culture that they invented. Really just a lot of respect and value for their team members. They knew that without their team members, they couldn't accomplish a lot of their objectives. And it was really something that made me feel very valuable and that my contributions mattered. And I remember when I came to our casino and was asked to start our casino, that was really something that I wanted our team members to feel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an important part of it. Yeah, you're so do you think, well, obviously it did, right? Those years of Hewlett-Packard were really formative for you, and I guess pretty well defined the rest of your career, right?
They did. They really did. I, you know, when I was asked to help start the HR department here, there were so many things that, you know, everything that I, you know, whether it's benefits, whether it was, you know, any policies or process, everything that I thought of was, how did I do it back at Hewlett-Packard? Yeah, it was training. What did we do? And today I still think a lot about how, you know, core processes were made, and how did I do it back then? And, you know, and just their communication style. And, yes, they were fantastic. I know the company has changed greatly now since founders have passed away, but I still try to practice some of those values that they instilled at the time.
Yeah, and they were very progressive too, as it pertains to women in the workplace, right?
They were. You know, when I was working in HR, I was able to see how progressive they were, because they really had goals and goals that they set for each department, and they really would base those goals on how many, what the demographics were, first of all, for the population of the area they were in, and also they would recruit heavily in different locations and colleges, and want to have, you know, strong women engineers, and they would, send you to school. And they really would mentor you quite a bit, and they were great. They were great as far as diversity.
Now, let's talk a little bit about gender in the workplace. You've had a pretty good. You haven't run into many problems that way, right? I mean, from our previous discussions, you don't seem to have been pushed back because of that, because of the companies you work for. Is that correct?
No, I haven't. I've been very fortunate in companies that I've worked for.
Which is very rare. I mean, I don't think I've interviewed any other woman, that maybe one or two, and I've probably interviewed about 50. Tell me a little bit anyways, because, of course, everybody has opinions on this, and this is important. In your opinion, your voice is important. Tell us a little bit about that. Because there are women out there who have had a little bit of a rough time, especially, you know, in the years that you were at Hewlett-Packard, right? That wasn't like now. tell us a little bit about your views on that and what your advice is to those women trying to make it in the workplace.
Let me think. I believe that some of my practices that I use and that have been very helpful for me is that I try to partner with the individuals that I work with. I try to share my ideas, but I don't try to force them. I don't take things personal, and I try not to have ego get in the way. I try to speak when I have something to say, but not speak just to say something. And one of the things that I find that is very helpful for me is active listening. And especially in the role that I play, if somebody is very angry, if I use the active listening skill, I can listen to what they're saying. Even if they're very angry or very emotional, I can hear what they're saying without taking anything personal. I think if you have skills to communicate, one can use those skills to collaborate in an effective manner with the individuals that they work with. I have found it to help me. I have found that in our meetings, I don't always have to speak, but what I will give to the team is that if they are making a decision, I will share how I feel it will impact our team members or what the impact will be down the road. I can't really give you the secret magic answer here.
Of course not. No, I understand. And it's really cool that you have had the kind of career you've had and what's possible when the atmosphere at the workplace is conducive to people getting ahead, to even learning to any difficulty. Tell us, you spent us all this time at Hewlett Packard, and then you came back to your people with all this knowledge. How was it received? How did people react to that?
Actually, it was received very well. And what's funny about it is it was received so much better than I ever knew. I meet with people quite a bit, and I actually have met with managers, and I do something what I call a stay interview, which is meeting with some of our managers that have been with us and are happy, in their job, and I ask them various questions. And one of the questions I ask them is, why do they stay with us? What makes them stay with us? What are they happy with? And some of the comments that I get back are comments on how I've affected them or impacted them or influenced them. And it's amazing to know, because I think sometimes we never realize how much we can influence someone and in our everyday work, and we don't even realize it. So I always try to tell my team that everybody's watching you, even though you don't know it. And those that are around you can be influenced by the smallest thing, the kindest word, or the smallest gesture. And it may mean, it may mean something very special to them. And many of them that stay with us, it's because of the way they're treated.
Yeah, that sure creates some longevity, right? The way you
treat
people, no question about it. tell me a little bit about where we are in Native Casino HR and the way customer service is viewed and where are we going?
I believe that Native businesses, casinos, are really making a name for themselves. Unlike how we first opened, there was a lot of questions on what Native casinos were. You know, you pictured these little smoky buildings with a couple of slot machines and cards. And now we are very progressive buildings and businesses. I believe customer service is what sets us apart in many ways. I believe that the Native businesses have shaken off a lot of the misnomers about how we treat our team members, or you know, they don't pay taxes. You know, all of the misnomers that have been out there for so long. You know, human resource has evolved tremendously from 30, 20, or even 10 years ago. I believe that, you know, HR professionals are you know, business partners in their organizations. And we're sought out for our inputs and opinions, impacts of, you know, our decisions. We are asked for those decisions. I believe that our guests, when they come into our businesses, they feel safe. They feel they're going to be treated right. They feel like they're valued. They feel that they're going to get a good product. So I believe that Native businesses and customer service is probably among the best in, you know, with other properties.
And you were saying that HR is being viewed differently now by the other departments, right?
Yes, yes. You know, many years ago, it was a paper pusher, you know, department. It was, you know, just, you know, change the status of a person. Now we're partners. You know, we sit at the table at the executive, you know, table. We're asked our opinions. You know, how do we do this? What's it going to impact? What's the law regarding this? You know, we are in every decision. So it's about partnership now in the organization. So it's much different than it was 30 years ago. When I first started at HP, it's so much more different than what HR is today.
Yeah, it's evolved quite a bit, right?
Yes, very much so.
Now, it's important because HR is basically the handling of your people, right?
It is. You could put it that way. It is employee engagement. You know, it is how are we going to keep that person? How are we going to value them? How are we going to, you know, keep that person? How are we going to acquire that person? Everything is based around that person. You know, we can't keep our business open if we don't have the right people in the right jobs.
Yeah, and that basically defines the direction that the actual organization is going in, because that's the culture, right?
That's the culture. You got it.
Yep. What can we improve? And what is the future looking at like?
For casinos or for tribal?
HR, for the HR departments.
Let me see. Let me prove. You know, I think it's a really exciting time for casino businesses or HR departments. The one thing I think that we can do as far as HR departments is really listen to our team members. You know, there's many times that our team members are the ones that really have many of the answers. And sometimes we will talk to maybe the middle-level managers and ask them for the answers. But sometimes you have to go straight to the source of the person doing the job, and they may have answers to some of the challenges a operation may be having. So I think going to the individuals themselves is very helpful. As far as HR departments in the organization, I think being involved, speaking at all levels, doing engagement surveys, there's just a number of things that you can do. One of the important things is to have reports. You know, keep track of your turnover, keep track of your promotions, you know, keep track of just your analytics, so you know how you are measuring, you know, year to year.
Yeah, how everything's going, right?
Hmm? Correct.
Yep. Tell me a little bit about the where we are in the casino business right now. It's an exciting time, right?
It is. Casino business is very competitive. You know, especially in San Diego, where we have, you know, probably the most casinos as, you know, as anyone, you know, in Southern California. You know, we really focus on our customer service. And that's the one thing that I believe we probably set ourselves apart on. When somebody calls Bruce, he actually picks up the phone and he will answer them, and he will make sure that one of us gets back to those individuals. The casino business in itself, you know, we're there for the entertainment, and people come here to have a good time, and we want them to have a good time. You know, we have a high quality of food. People come in to, you know, have a good buffet. You know, we have one of the best buffets. You've eaten here, and you know, we have a buffet that's 650 feet. And you know, the casino is a growing industry, and it is a fun environment. It is a lot of work, but it's also a lot of fun. I think it is one that is growing. I think it is one that is a honorable job. I feel that is one that I really have appreciated getting involved with. I would have never thought I would work for a casino. But I have been very happy for the last 18 years.
Yeah, it's really really an incredible journey, isn't it?
Yes, it has been.
If you look at your evolution from when you were like 10 and found out about your heritage to where you are now, what are those moments that really stand out for you?
Ooh, let me think. There are quite a few. I find that, you know, I think there's a few things that pop out. One of them is sometimes I have to stop and realize that I'm in a position where I can pay it forward. I had a meeting with one of our managers recently, and she made a statement to me on a comment that I had made with her. And it really made me realize how much how much impact or influence we have with our team members. And it made me realize that this individual was looking at me how I looked at the individuals, the mentors that I had at HP, and I was paying it forward. So that was kind of like an aha moment with me. Another moment was I have a program here that's called Women at Work, and we bring in women speakers, and they talk to our women leaders here at the casino, and I decided to bring my sister and ask my sister, Tilda Green, to come over and share her story. And the theme of the Women at Work is that everybody has a story. She's been with the tribe for 40 years, so she has seen the tribe grow tremendously. And after her presentation, we kind of sat there and were talking about how far our tribe has come. So that was another aha moment of from the time, you know, not only when I was 10 and found out that I was, you know, a Native American, but the tribe itself and how far the tribe has come from back in the day of forming the tribe in the government to where we are today. And, you know, that was really nice reminiscing, you know, the progression that we've come. So that was great.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. Yeah. Should we take some calls?
Sure.
Ms. Tino Magnana, do you have a question for Judy?
I certainly do, Tina. This is Heidi. Judith, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Heidi. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much. So Judith, to me, is like the grand dame of HR in Indian country, a wonderful mentor and leader. And I know many of the ladies, because I was privileged enough to be at one of your women, to be a speaker at Women at Work. They speak so highly of Judith, Tino. So I wanted to know from her a couple of things. And one is, Judith, how do you, and you mentioned it now, you know, you realize how you have such an influence and impact on people without even knowing it sometimes. What specific principles do you put in place or follow that you believe will make a good influence or good impact on your teams? What is your leadership style, in other words?
What is my leadership style? Hey, I believe that comes with the communication style in itself. I do my best in practicing listening, really good listening skills on what a person is saying, and not reacting to one side of the story. You know, I always believe, and maybe this is the HR in me, not reacting to one side of the story. There's always two sides of the story, and somewhere in the middle is the truth. So what do I know for sure? And not making a decision on assumptions. So I always try to get the full story, and many times, as you know, the initial story is not at all how we believed it to be at first. So my leadership style is to ensure that I have all the facts communicating and not make a rash decision. If that makes sense.
And what is your... Yeah, absolutely. And what is your take on servant leadership? And I often feel that the human resources department should change their name to human relationships, because I hate the word resources.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, there's so many names for human resources anymore. You know, we have, you know, relationships. We have, you know, the talent acquisition department. We have talent, you know, talent departments. And but, you know, I believe that resources was originally because you were a resource to every department there. And so we've considered changing our name, but I still feel that we are a resource, not, you know, we are a resource, you know, to each of our departments. We are a resource in their decisions. We are a resource in, you know, all of their actions here. So I'm okay with the name Human Resources.
If you look at it that way, yes. And so, and what is your take on servant leadership, Judith?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Well, you're a wonderful example of servant leadership. I mean, you know, being part of being a president for, I think it's 7 years now at Nahara, and, you know, that's voluntary work. It's not something you're getting paid for.
That's true. That's true. I believe that servant leadership, you know, I just feel that, you know, that's a hard one to my mind's going all over the place.
Well, you know what? You're a perfect example of a servant leader. So maybe it should just equal Judith Wright. And one last question is, what do you see as your biggest HR challenges when it comes to employee development or leadership development? What do you see right now as your biggest challenges? And where do you see the future of employee development going?
Our biggest challenge right now for leadership development is, it's not executive leadership. It's not entry-level leadership. It's almost that middle leadership. And sometimes there is a assumption that, oh, when you go through so much leadership, we don't need it anymore. And don't have time anymore. And they don't realize that that the tools are there for you to be a better leader. And when you are a better leader, you don't have the scrambling that you are doing. Once they're in there, they do so much better. So getting them to understand that leadership development is so valuable and worthwhile to them. And it's worth the time, I want to say.
Sure. And where do you see the future going of employee development? You know, we've had online training. We've had all of these tools at our disposal. Is there any trends that you see going forward?
I think we have to utilize every type of employee development. Everybody's life is different. You know, everybody has different needs. So from any type of online webinars, in-person conference, any type that you can have, as long as even TED Talks, you know, audiobooks, is educational and helps an individual. Just expose yourself to something. And I think that's the important key to it. And I think that's where a lot of people miss the boat sometimes.
So it's the blended learning
absolutely.
That suits each individual's personality.
Everybody is going to be different and learns in a different way.
Absolutely. Awesome, Judith. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you, Tino, again for a wonderful show.
Oh, no problem. Thanks so much. You have a good evening.
Good evening.
Bye, Haiti.
Thank you. Great questions. I think we have time for one more. Hang on one sec. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Judy?
Hi, Tino and Judy. This is Nick Blossom. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. How are
Good.
You?
Doing great. I apologize for the noise. I actually had to – I'm on daddy duty right now, so I'm double dipping.
Okay, no problem. We understand.
Yeah. I had a question. I've got a couple customers who are struggling to go from being a task-based, basically paper-pushing, as you called it, to really being a partner on a property. Do you have any advice or some things maybe you did in your time that could help those departments really transform into operational partners?
So they're having I'm just trying to see if I heard this correctly. So you have individuals who are having a difficulty from going from the task base to actually giving opinions and being project partners, business partners. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, the operators really don't see them as a partner, and they try to circumvent them in a lot of hiring decisions, recruiting, discipline, training, mandatory items they have to do.
Okay. Well, I think they should go to Nahara. No, I'm just kidding. Task-based is really it sounds like they don't really have the confidence. And so what type of training have they gone through? And it really sounds like they would have to go with a one-on-one meeting with here are the expectations we need from you. We need you to not only give us the information that you are, doing as far as your task. However, we need some solutions. What are we going to do with it? And then give them those expectations. It sounds like they're not really clear on what the expectations of them are. And if you give them the expectations of, we need to find the expectation, resolution, and then what are some options that we can have on the other side of that. Sometimes people are a little hesitant to speak up if they don't believe people don't want to hear them speak up. So that's my thought.
Okay, good. If they were to reach out to Nahara, how would they get a hold of you? Just directly or?
Yeah, directly. My number is on the website.
Okay, great. First, I've heard of you, so, I'm learning as we speak. It's been a great call listening to your experience and everything.
Great.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you so much. So we've run out of time, but I wanted to wrap it up with a couple of things that Bruce Howard said about you and your performance at Valley View. He said that you have consistently been able to keep the turnover at the casino the lowest out of the 15 casinos in the California area for the last 15 years, and that you are warm, gentle, respectful, honest, an endearing person. So I think there's a lot of people out there that feel that way about you, and I'm glad that you came on the show and expressed your feelings and your views on everything, the great stuff that you do.
Oh, that was very nice of him. Well, thank you, Tino. It was a pleasure being on your show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and we'll definitely have you back.
Well, thank you. It was really fun to do this.
And my next guest is Thomas Julian on on September 30th.
Oh, good. September
30th. Yeah, your friend and our mutual friend. Yeah, yeah. So that should be a good show.
Great. I'll make sure I will listen.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. You have a great evening.
Thank you, Tino.
Okay,
have a great
bye-bye.
Night.
All right. Great interview. She's a great person. So I have Thomas Julian, Monday, September 30th, is the next guest. And he's pretty amazing. Wait till you hear what he has to say about customer service. You're gonna lose it. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. All you have to do is have time to listen. All right, take care. Have a good evening, and we'll see you next time.